a church where we can be gone for even several weeks at a time. I was going to joke and get up this morning and say, my name is Chet McDaniel, and I actually, believe it or not, I'm on staff here. That'd be amazing. But we got some business done, we got to play a little bit, and we're just blessed to not only be able to travel, but to have a place to come home to. So we thank you for that. I also want to thank Jeff for taking the easy part of worship this morning. See what I did there? All right. Some of y'all get that joke on the way home. But seriously, it's great to be back. And we wanted to take some time this morning to introduce you to our family. We go around the country doing this all over the place. We even did it here about 4 or 5 years ago. But obviously, there are so many new faces and so many new hearts that we wanted to be able to share some time with you and tell you about our family. And that way, you get to know us a little bit better. My mom and dad have been going here for a few months now, and they moonlight, I guess you could say. My dad's been a preacher his whole life, and so he preaches all over not only the Metroplex to fill in, but sometimes some interim positions. And so while they're not somewhere currently, I put them to work, and then we'll miss them when they do head somewhere else to do God's work. I believe that each and every one of us has the right and the God-given opportunity to choose to be happy. To choose to live a positive lifestyle, and in living such a lifestyle, attract as many people to Jesus as possible. I love that video. You get kind of a glimpse into our lives. It's funny because when I show that video, a lot of places you hear ooh and ah, and y'all are all like, yeah, we've seen it, you know. But I do the things I do. I live the life I live because I have the ability to live it, and I have the ability to live it for God. And we're going to talk a lot this morning about staying positive and choosing to be happy, but I don't want you to hear that all of our life has been roses. In fact, in January 1980, my parents got the shock of their lives.
It was a blow that we were not at all prepared for. We had no idea that this pregnancy was any different, that Chet was going to come out any different. And when he did, it was a blow that knocked us to our knees. And Chet has already said, we don't want you to get the idea that everything is just roses. We're going to present a very positive view of life and a very positive view of his life. But understand, there are tough times that Christians go through, and we experienced it in full. There were plenty of times when we just didn't know what to do. We thought we knew what to do with Randy and Jenny. They were children with arms. I don't know that young parents know what to do, but we always make out, don't we? And we certainly thought we knew what to do with them. We knew we had no idea how to raise a child without arms. We kept looking out 34 years and saying, what will he be then? What will life hold for him? Where is this going? There were nights when we stood over his bed and cried. Eventually, we realized that wasn't doing him any good or us any good. And we set our sight on bringing him up just like we were bringing up the other two, telling him that it was his life, there were no limits except what he set on himself, God would be with him, and he could do anything he wanted to do.
Which got them in trouble, because I believed them. I was about sixth grade at the time we moved from Bossier City, Louisiana to Dallas-Fort Worth, and they let me pick the school that I attend. We wanted a school not only with accessible attitudes, but also accessible campus. So I chose the elementary school, and he chose a house down the street from the school. Then that becomes important when I talk to you about the first wheelchair that I had. The wheelchair that I have now is, I call it the Rolls Royce of wheelchairs. It has every bell and whistle, everything that I need. It's customized for me. It is perfect the way it is for me. Very, very nice. That first wheelchair that I had from age 3 to 6th grade was the Pinto of wheelchairs. Some things that it did have on it, didn't have on it. One of the things it didn't have are called resistance brakes. And what I mean by that is when I'm driving my current chair, if I start to go downhill, there's actually a governor, there's actually a brake system that will begin to hold the chair back so that I don't go down the hill too fast, much like your cruise control will in your car. That first wheelchair that I had nothing like that. The longer I went downhill, the faster my wheelchair would go. And the only way to stop it was to hit a little button on the side labeled brakes. And you can guess how often a sixth grade boy hit the brakes. I didn't even know if that button worked or not. So I loved going back and forth to school every day because my friends were on their bikes and I was in my chair and I could get going pretty fast. And all was going well until one day a neighbor decided to call my parents. He said,
I don't mean to be a tattletale.
Which is baloney, right? If you don't mean to be a tattletale, don't tattletale. It's very easy.
I don't mean to be a tattletale, but I just thought you ought to know. I was in my car behind Chet going down Rolling Meadows, and according to my speedometer, he was going 25 miles an hour.
My mom hit the roof. I can't believe you're going that fast. Do you know how dangerous that is? You know how moms can be. She walked out of the room, and he looked at me and said, awesome. She always rode the brakes, and he always tried to go too fast. If I'd had a two of her, I wouldn't be up in front of you, and if I had two of him, I'd be dead. Simple as that.
But we were a perfect pair.
That's right.
And still are. After 50 years of marriage, by the way, coming up in December.
Fantastic.
There are several of these stories like that one that he just told in a book that I wrote. I wanted to write about his life. I think it is a positive encouragement for so many. And so I wrote All He Needs for Heaven. Then a year or two after I wrote that one, he wrote one about his view of life and how he takes every day. You don't need arms. I'm not broken is the main caption there. I'm not broken. You don't need arms. And those books are available on a table there. We'll be out there selling those after services this morning. There's also a DVD of a presentation that we did somewhat similar to this, but much more focused on pro-life. And that will be available out there also. There are some basic lessons that we've learned from Chet's life that we want to share with you this morning. The first one, God didn't cause Chet to be born without arms. I'm very concerned about our view of God. I think it affects how we serve Him, our attitude toward Him, our love for Him. And so often I hear people talking about God did something to me. There's an accident on the expressway and someone says, well, I don't know what God did, why God did this, but he does it for a purpose. You know, everything happens for a reason. Would you look at James chapter 1 with me as a picture of God? I think it's going to come up on the screen there, but I'll be quoting from a different version anyway. Let no man say when he is tempted, I am tempted of God. For God cannot be tempted of evil, neither does he tempt any man. Did you hear that? But each man is tempted when he's drawn away by his own lust and enticed. Lust, when it's full grown, brings forth sin. Sin, when it is grown, brings forth death. Don't be deceived. Every good and perfect gift is from above and comes down from the Father of lights, with whom there is no variation or shadow that is cast by turning. Do you see two different directions here? There's a direction from which evil comes and there's a direction from which good comes. Our God is good. Our God does good things for us. Our God gets us through tough times. Our God can take the bad things and twist them around so that they are ultimately for our good. Good comes out of it. But He doesn't hurt us. He helps us.
The easiest way I can explain it is that we live in a fallen world. Bad things happen not because God reaches down and causes a bad thing to happen, but because the world is separated from the perfect source, separated by sin. It was perfect. Go back and look in the Garden of Eden. God is walking, literally putting footsteps along with Adam and Eve. And then we messed up. And so evil entered the world, and it's not that He's not sovereign. It's not that He's not all-powerful. But in His infinite wisdom, He gave us free choice. And that free choice means that when we come on Sunday morning and we sing the songs that we've been singing, and we worship Him, that worship actually means something. Mm-hmm. Imagine it this way. Hannah, my oldest, is a hugger. A hugger, and she's an yeah. I love you kid. What does she say? I love you like 100, 200 times a day, right? I'm not kidding. I'm not off. I'm not exaggerating. That's how much. Now, she says I love you all the time, but she doesn't always get her way. And even in the fiercest of arguments, she'll still say, I love you. And I know that love is genuine because she's mad at me when she says it. But if you got everything you ever wanted, if there was no option to choose to walk away from God, then would your love to Him Would your profession to him, would your confession of him mean anything if you had no other choice? And so just as we choose to worship, the thief has to be able to choose to steal. Evil has to be able to choose evil for this relationship to mean anything. And that means some, no, all, are going to suffer. All of us are going to run into worldly problems. Some of us live with it every day. Some in more minor forms every day, but it's going to happen. And you know what? If me not having arms means I live in a world where I can choose to worship God, I'm okay with that. And we should all be okay with whatever comes our way because we have that relationship with God. Some people have told me before, well, maybe God made you this way so that you could stand up before a crowd and talk about it. Maybe he did it so that he would have a vessel through who to speak. Look in John chapter 9. Jesus is walking down the road with his disciples, and they see a man born blind. And his disciples say, Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, causing him to be born blind? Jesus, I love this version. It's from The Message. Says, you're asking the wrong question. You're looking for someone to blame. There is no such cause-effect here. Look instead for what God can do. In other words, was this man born blind so that 30 years later, Jesus could come upon the scene, heal him, and show God's glory? No. What it says there is, he was born blind. And while that would be tragic, watch what happens when God gets involved. It's two very different ways of looking at it. There's a famous football player who he was one of those... Why am I dropping his name?
Reggie White.
Thank you, Reggie White. It's because he didn't play for the Cowboys. That's why I didn't care for his name. So every time Reggie White did something on the field, do you remember? He would run to the cameras and point to the heavens, right? Every time. But Reggie retired from football and went to seminary. And he spent years in seminary, and then there was this interview that I was watching on TV, and the interviewer asked him, Reggie, what's the one thing you want people to know after all those years in seminary? And he said, God doesn't need football.
I thought he did. You know.
Yeah. And the interviewer said, I'm sorry. He said, God doesn't need... I thought I was given this amazing talent by God so that every time I did something, I could run to the camera and point it back to him. And then I realized he's God. And he doesn't need something man has invented to praise his name. He just needs me to serve him. He doesn't need a man with no arms. But as it leads into our second point, watch what happens when we get out of his way and do what he asks us to do.
I think it's important, no matter what your status in life, to make sure that you serve the Lord. I suppose that just about everyone here has something they would like different. Maybe it's a pain, maybe it's a serious illness. Very possibly someone here has been diagnosed with cancer. And you're suffering. And it's foreboding, to say the least. Maybe it's a relationship. Maybe it's a financial situation. You'd like something different. Do you try to make it different? Yes. Pray about it? Yes. Ask God to make it better. But the important thing we want to say today is while you're waiting for it to change, use that time to serve him. I'm afraid that some people have said, I'll serve him when?
We set up prayers all the time. God, if you will. You know, and you insert your problem there. Fix this situation. Heal me. Give me a better marriage. Fix the economy. The next part of that prayer is, then I will worship you, praise you, never do this again, you know, whatever you want to insert there. The problem with that statement is that that's an ultimatum and a very scary way to approach the creator of the universe. Because I learned a long time ago that God doesn't need my ultimatum. He needs me to shut up and serve. Quit whining and get busy. I don't pretend to know how God works.
No. If you did, you'd be God.
Right. And though I've many times wanted to be, I'm not. But I will say this. I know that I will never receive arms in a miraculous sense. That the light's not going to flash and they're not going to magically appear. And the reason I know that is because I was put on earth just as you were put on earth to serve and glorify God. And if I needed arms, he would have given them to me in the first place. You see, I don't need arms to serve. In fact, sometimes he can use them in ways that he couldn't if I did have arms. See, while I don't think he made me like this to draw a crowd, I do think he can draw a crowd. And I never wanted to do this. Music was my thing. If I was going to serve, I was going to lead worship. I never wanted to talk. I know Jeff doesn't believe me, but I never wanted to talk. And the reason was that I didn't like drawing attention to the fact that I didn't have arms. I liked pretending that I did. I liked pretending that nothing was wrong. So my dad decided to write a book about my life, and I told him then, and I'm not saying anything that he doesn't know, that I didn't want him to write this book. Because I knew it would draw attention, and I knew what we were going to have to do. I knew there was value in the story, but I didn't want to get up and tell it. So as most fathers would do in that situation, he listened to me and did what was best anyways.
And he wrote a chapter in it.
Fast forward several years, and we had to get up and tell the story and watch as amazing things happen. But several years later, I got a call to speak at a Social Security office in Oklahoma. Now, this would be around early November is when they asked me to come. They told me, you can't mention Jesus. You can say you are a Christian, but that's it. You can't say anything else, which I thought was ironic since we have freedom of speech. But, well, that's a whole other sermon. So I agreed to it because I believe that we have the opportunity to plant seeds even if we can't get up and boldly declare who God is. So I accepted the opportunity, and right before it was time to go up there, they gave me a call, and they said, can you delay the date by 6 weeks? We've had some scheduling conflicts. I said, sure.
6 weeks is important.
So 6 weeks later, we show up, and the lady that had hired me, she was the second in charge of that Social Security office. She wasn't there that day. I later found out that she was at her own son's funeral. The head of the office called me back and said, that funeral is the seventh death of an immediate family member of members in this office in the past 6 weeks. Instead of the topic we assigned you or the topic we asked for about how to be happy and how to stay positive, can you instead speak on where is God when we suffer? I said, not without scripture, because they had forbidden me from quoting scripture. And she said, do whatever it takes. This office needs to be healed. And an hour later, my dad and I were counseling people. We were hearing people through their tears say that they were going to give God another chance, that they were going to recommit their lives even though they had walked away from him. Listen, arms or no arms, I'm in for that kind of thing. You use me however you want to use me, if that's what I can do. And I fear too often we sit back and say, but I'm not suited for that job, or I don't think that's for me, or maybe I don't have time, or maybe it just scares me to get up in front of a classroom of kids. Listen, whatever that excuse is, God's prepared you to serve. Some of us have strengths and some of us have weaknesses, but what's awesome is he works through your weaknesses better than he works through your strengths. And he doesn't need you to sit back and give him excuses why you can't serve. He needs you to quit whining and serve him.
And in serving him, there's tremendous joy. One of the joys is in learning to see the Lord in other people. There are plenty of people in life that just are not particularly attractive to me, and I would think that you would say the same thing. Maybe it's worse than that. I think one of the great challenges that we face is learning to see the Lord in other people and see the potential that they have to then serve Him and bring glory to Him. And rather than trying to assign them some kind of neat little box or category or label, let's just love them and help them to become what the Lord wants us, His creation, to be.
I love the story of Zacchaeus. I think maybe it's because I learned it when I was a wee little person. Wait, I still am a wee little person. That doesn't make any sense. So, but we treat Zacchaeus in a very cutesy way, don't we? I mean, we teach him to kids and we go, oh, he's Zacchaeus and he was just this little guy and he did some bad things, but, you know, then Jesus loved him. There's some depth to that story, and I want to read it this morning. So we're going to be in Luke chapter 19. And we're going to stop here and there, so Ian's going to have his work cut out for him. But I want to read the story through the eyes of Zacchaeus, because I think Jesus does something for Zacchaeus in this story that we have a hard time doing in the name of Jesus for other people. So it says, then Jesus entered and walked through Jericho. There was a man there, his name Zacchaeus. He was the head tax man and quite rich. Let's flip that around. He was quite rich because he was the head tax man, just like they still are. Anyways, so he wanted desperately to see Jesus, but the crowd was in his way. Now, he was a short man, and he couldn't see over the crowd. Now, Zacchaeus has three strikes against him already in the story. He's short. Now, this is probably more, the average Jew of his day was 5 foot tall. He looks a whole lot more like me than he does like you. He was very rich, and this would have made him a socioeconomic target. I mean, this would have made him, for all the people that didn't have what he have, that he basically stole, he would have been hated. And three, and by far the worst, he was a Jew working for the Romans. This would have been the ultimate betrayal. This was not the guy invited to the party. In fact, I want you to get this, because I always thought Zacchaeus was just the late guy to the party. You know, the people that can't get to church on Sunday morning on time to save their lives. I know who you are. I thought maybe Zacchaeus was just late. Everybody else had formed the line, and he was just late to the party. But think about who would have been up there. Who would have been first to see Jesus? The Pharisees, the socialites, the people that would have made sure that Zacchaeus wouldn't have a place. Because you see, when Zacchaeus came on to any kind of gathering, everybody there got a pit in their stomach kind of feeling. You know what I'm talking about? The thing you worry about the most, the thing you fear most in life, your deepest, darkest secret, that thing that churns your stomach, that's what happened when Zacchaeus would walk up. So think about it. Why would he deserve to see Jesus in the first place? At least that's what that crowd thought. So that doesn't deter Zacchaeus. He runs up ahead and climbs up a tree. And when Jesus gets there, he looked up the tree and said, Zacchaeus, hurry down. Today is my day to be a guest in your home. To which the Pharisees must have been like, what? Zacchaeus scrambles out of the tree, hardly believing his luck, delighted to take Jesus home with him. And then the scripture says that everyone who saw the incident was indignant and grumped. What business does he have getting cozy with this crook? Does it say just the jerks in the crowd thought that? And just those Pharisees that we like to say, oh, the Pharisees. Just the people who didn't know who Jesus was? No. Everyone thought the same thing. Why does he get to see Jesus? He doesn't deserve him. And now normally I stir up a hornet's nest and then I go get on a flight and go home. So I'm going to stir up a hornet's nest in my own church.
And stay here?
And stay here.
All right.
Are you ready? Why do we all look the same? Why are we predominantly all white, upper to middle class, drive two cars. Why are we all the same? Because I fear. I fear, and not at Lake Cities necessarily, but I fear as a whole, as Christianity in general, we've decided to make ourselves the gatekeepers to Jesus. And we've decided that the person who doesn't look like us is either a different color, makes less money, smells differently, acts differently. We've decided that people that don't look like us somehow don't deserve Jesus. I was at a church in Tennessee, and a woman approached me. She was in a wheelchair, and she said, "I need to tell you that I wasn't always in this wheelchair. I was ambulatory before a disease struck. And while I was able to walk around, I was," she said, I was, she kind of said it under her breath. She goes, "I was the youth minister." She was like, "Not by title." No. I mean, we didn't go that far. But she said, "We were a very small church, and if the youth wanted to go somewhere, I took them. If they wanted to have a lock-in, I stayed overnight with them." And then the disease hit. And when it was known that I couldn't get out of my wheelchair ever again, the elders came to me and said, "You need to find a different place to worship, because we're not paying for a ramp to the building, because that's not important." And many of you are shaking your heads and murmuring, and that's the correct response, but wait, there's more. She was the preacher's wife. Years and years ago, it was black versus white. Maybe that's a different argument for today, but it still happens. That Sunday morning is the most segregated time in America. And I just don't see that from Jesus. I see him going to people whose society has slammed the door on and going to them, not making them come to him. He's often accused of being a drunk. Why do you hang around with the drunks? Why do you hang around with the prostitutes? He's asked time and time again, "Why are you with these people?" And every time he responds something along the same lines: "Because I know the will of my Father." Which leads me to believe that Jesus and God have a heart for people whom society does not have time for. And church, we ought to be a hospital. If the love that we felt from Christ were evident in our lives, I think the people whom society has shut the door on would storm the gates of the church to want to find out more. I think that's our role. And I want to commend you from something, and this is awkward for me, and maybe it's going to be for you, but deal with it. I want to commend you for something. Many years ago, I wanted to be a worship minister, and I searched and I searched and I searched, and I firmly believe I was turned down at many churches because I didn't have arms. And you all and your leadership here is to be commended for believing and hiring and being willing to put me up front every Sunday morning, despite the fact that I don't have arms. But now my next question is, where are the rest of the people that look like me? Why aren't the aisles filled with people in wheelchairs? Why aren't the seats filled with people who are struggling? I go around the country and tell this all the time, but this would be about a year or two ago. I was at, we were going to the hills, and I remember sitting in my car. We had gotten there just a little bit early, and this guy was walking up, and he was head-to-toe biker. You know what I'm talking about. I mean, the leather, the tattoos, he looked like he hadn't bathed in a long time. And I know what's right, but I find myself, very first reaction, "Oh man, what's he doing here? I mean, we're casual, but come on now." The Lord dresses up for Sunday mornings, right?
Coat and tie.
Coat and tie. What is, he doesn't, why would he even come? So Rick actually finished his sermon, invited those who needed Jesus to come forward, and the first person down the aisle with tears streaming down his face as he hit his knees into the stage was that guy. And I was the second one to fall. Because everybody needs Jesus. And here's the thing. Whether we think we've got it all together or not, we're just as messed up as they are. We're just covered in grace. And they need to be too.
All those cars, nice houses, the fancy clothes will fade. Earth has no treasure but perish with using, however precious they may be. Chet, I am motivated every time we get to speak together. I'm motivated every time we travel together. Your bright outlook on life challenges me. I'd like to say I got it started. Your mother and I got it started, but you've taken it and run far beyond what we imagined. You've written a full book about it. Don't tell us the whole book, please.
But I could.
In a few minutes, tell us how you face every day and what motivates you.
So every day we wake up, we're given a choice. I say it's what side you wake up on the bed. Because one side of the bed is negative. Always down, always whiny. And make sure the world around them knows that they are having a bad day. You all should believe me that most of America wakes up on this side of the bed. Because you drive with them on 820. Right? That can put anybody on the wrong side of the bed. Most of America wakes up on the side that makes sure everyone around them knows that they're unhappy. And every person in here has a whiny friend. And as I said that, you pictured that whiny friend in your head. And if you didn't picture someone, someone pictured you. So hang on. There is no way that a negative person can attract someone to Christ. It does not work that way, because the world already has negativity. The world already is beaten down. And when we as Christians live that kind of lifestyle, they don't want any part of it, because that's what they already have. The only side of the bed that you can choose to wake up on and serve God, serve Christ, and attract others to him is a sign that puts a smile on your face, knows that God is in control, he loves you, and that's all you need in life. There is not one more thing you need to be happy than God's love.
Amen.
People ask me all the time, do you think of heaven more often than other Christians? I think I understand why they're asking the question. I think the question comes from, do you think of heaven more often because when you get there, you'll have arms? No. I think of heaven all the time because when I get there, God's going to be there, because faith will be sight, because I won't have to sit and worship and wonder what he looks like and wonder and all of that, and we'll just get to praise forever. That's what excites me. And look, I believe spiritual bodies are perfect and earthly bodies are imperfect, and I do believe that I will much more look like you or what we're all going to look like when we're in heaven. But seriously, if I got to heaven and I still didn't have arms, you think I'd be like, well, I'm out of here. No way. I am so pumped to get to that party. But what I want to leave you with is this, that party can happen here. Heaven can be brought to earth by us. Listen to the happiness in their voices. They've had a party down in Kids Praise. You think the world needs to hear about Jesus? Show them your smile. Show them your love. Show them who he is. You got to know him to be able to live a happy life. In order to live a positive life, in order to get over life's throws and life's curveballs, you got to know Jesus. If you don't know him, this is an excellent morning to come to know him. It's the first step of baptism. Many of us have already done that. We can recommit our lives, whatever the case may be. If you're hurting, if you need someone, if you need Jesus, there'll be guys down front to receive you. Come now as we stand and as we sing. So.